This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Hope you enjoyed this podcast of the Zioli Show. And if you did, please rate it on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. You know what I'm saying? Thanks a lot.
The Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
Today is the anniversary of Prohibition, January 16th, 1919, when the 18th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified. Yes, Prohibition, which, as you know, solved alcoholism as a problem for our country. Welcome back. Glad you're here. CBSPhilly.com/Rich and on Twitter at Rich Zioli. You may not know, by the way, that a big part of Prohibition back then, the Volstead Act and then the amending of the Constitution with the 18th Amendment, a big part of that was actually based in racist immigration fears around Catholics, in particular the Irish and Italians. It's one of those little known facts about history, but it was also part of the campaign of why they got rid of booze, because they felt like, and this is where one of those negative stereotypes about Irish people comes from. But back then there was a whole campaign about all these Irish Catholics who were coming here and drinking and reproducing and taking over. And that was actually one of the reasons why they used as an argument for Prohibition back then. Not even kidding. There's a great article on this, which I will share with you in just a moment. But first, the president's physician is addressing the White House press corps. The bottom line is this: the president's a little bit overweight. He's got to lose about 10 to 15 pounds. He says his cardiac health is excellent. The press doesn't care about any of that. All they want to know is he insane? Does he have dementia? Does he have Alzheimer's? That's one question after another. And the doctor said he gave the president a cognitive test, and the president passed the cognitive test. There were 30 questions. He got 30 right, whatever the criteria is. So, wait, can you pot it up real fast?
And you can find it online.
As a reporter asking about the president's cognitive health. A
couple of things. Do you have a life expectancy range for him based on his results?
They're hoping it's Wednesday.
What exactly does the exercise and eating plan look like? Is it you're going to put an elliptical machine?
The press is hoping his life expectancy won't make it past the winter.
And then also, number three, did you see any evidence of bone spurs, which the president said that he suffered from?
None of that stuff's been bothering him recently, so we didn't examine his, for bone spurs right now. He's not come to me, complaining of that, so there was no reason in this particular assessment. We were pretty crunched for time with everything we had done, so we didn't look at it.
They'll keep asking questions in different ways about how crazy he is. We'll come back to it a little bit later in the show. I'm sure at some point there'll be a montage of the press asking the same question over and over and over and over and over again, and one more time for good measure. And you mentioned his cognitive dissonance, but
the question you wanted me to brought up, I heard her question. She asked what was the name of the cognitive test that he was given. So I guess
the answer is it's Mad Libs. Mad Libs is the answer. He filled in all the right answers and made a great story there with Mad Libs.
But earlier, if they had been listening, he did detail that test, which he said is one of the more extensive ones.
And then they asked the follow-up question about it. So would you say he's dementia or Alzheimer's? all right, so Prohibition. Now, this is an interesting point here. This is our nation's history as we think about the times in which we live in today. Prohibition, 100 years ago today, when it was ratified in the United States Constitution. Think about that point, though, that it was a constitutional amendment with Prohibition. And that's an important point. As much as I disagree, obviously, with Prohibition, I do give them credit for actually amending the Constitution when they banned alcohol versus just passing a federal law. That said, though, they pretty much shoved it down the states' throats. The Wartime Prohibition Act of 1918 banned making and selling drinks with a kick higher than 1.28% alcohol by volume, which, let me tell you, that's not much. That's not much at all. So your average beer has anywhere from 4.5 to, nowadays, craft beers can go all the way up to 9, 10, 11. But yeah, 1.28%. That was the law back then, which is still the law in Utah, as a matter of fact. Well, maybe not that low, but pretty damn close. So that went into effect. And the idea of that was it was going to save grain to feed troops during World War I. And it suggested a lesson back then. The government isn't always honest about its aims. Prohibition was politically popular enough to pass a constitutional amendment. As with a lot of rhetoric surrounding today's war on drugs, Prohibition fed off fears of foreigners, especially Catholics, from Southern and Central Europe who have been flooding U.S. cities for decades. That beer and wine were closely associated with German Americans, relatives of our enemy in World War I, made it easier to paint drinking culture in general as un-American. Prohibition was enforced very differently depending on who you were and where you lived. Well, I think we all know that, considering we've watched The Untouchables a few times in our life. In other areas, prohibition was strictly enforced at the state and local level, but in some places it was kind of looked on as a no big deal, as you would imagine. The Federal Bureau of Narcotics was established in 1930 and employed many of the same people who worked in the Federal Bureau of Prohibition. That was under President Franklin Roosevelt. They use this as one of the ways to expand the federal government's powers over the states in a big, big way. For example, New York said back then, it told the feds, we don't have enough manpower to police bootlegging and speakeasies. They said, if you want to enforce the law, you're going to have to do it. And so, as a result of that, prohibition massively goosed federal law enforcement efforts, including incarceration on a mass scale. Prohibition helped create many aspects of modern federal governance. But in other areas, such as North Carolina and Virginia, prohibition was strictly enforced at the state and local level. Popular opinion and the need for tax revenue can overcome almost anything. If prohibition enjoyed broad support at its start, it quickly became apparent that the costs outweighed the benefits, which did include a significant decrease in the total amount of alcohol consumed and the incidence of cirrhosis of the liver. The law was not only enforced erratically and unfairly, it created the precondition that allowed criminals to corrupt law enforcement and to make huge profits via black markets. More important, crime became organized, in order to facilitate smuggling and the transport of goods to every market that wanted them. The Gallo brothers out in California, Gallo, you know the name Gallo, the winery? They supplied Al Capone in Chicago with wine concentrate. And New York gangsters started reaching out to Canadians and beer barons in Cincinnati and elsewhere. Public opinion turned against prohibition, and some of its leading advocates became some of its biggest opponents. As important, once the Great Depression hit, the federal government desperately wanted revenue, and excise taxes on booze had always been a strong source of income. As Daniel Okrent, author of The Essential History of the Last Call, told Reason, D.C.'s need for cash helped to make prohibition not just possible, but desirable. Reason.com, Nick Gillespie writing this. In today's America, of course, beer, wine, and alcohol are legal, and even recreational marijuana is cool in 8 states and the District of Columbia. Legalization efforts have wisely focused on many of the same arguments that brought down prohibition. Currently, 61% of Americans think pot should be treated the same as alcohol. I bring this up because in New Jersey now, the governor, Phil Murphy, has promised to legalize weed. Some towns are saying they don't want it, and they're passing their own rules saying it won't be sold here. Which I think is fine if a town doesn't want to have anything to do with it. As important, since 1969, that's also an interesting part about this. So we banned alcohol through a constitutional amendment. With drugs, we just kind of made federal laws and then forced the states to comply by putting things on these controlled lists. Pot is an example of this because it's on the dangerous substance list, the controlled dangerous substance list. So that is a question as the states battle for increased legalization. But hey, happy anniversary to Prohibition. 100 years ago today, the 18th Amendment, which of course then was overturned by the 21st Amendment to the Constitution. All right, so a couple of things here for you today. The nonsense around this word that the president might have said, and whether or not he said the word crap hole or crap house. This is fascinating, this word. We're all consumed by this word. And there's a lot of audio on this today. Cory Booker, who will not allow Governor Phil Murphy to take the spotlight. Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, has decided today that he was going to go after Trump's Department of Homeland Security secretary, and he was going to let her have it. Now, if you don't think for a second Cory Booker is running for president of the United States, if you've had your doubts about Cory Booker, the grandstanding, if you've thought to yourself, maybe Booker is just content to be a United States senator from New Jersey and just serve, well, not really, but just serve the people of New Jersey. Oh, no, my friends, you see, Cory Booker is running for president. Take a listen.
I know you're aware of a 2017 GAO report that found, and I quote, out of the 85 violent extremist incidences that resulted in death since September 12, 2001, Far right-wing violent extremist groups were responsible for 73%. When I go through the Black Belt in the South, when I'm in Atlanta, Black churches in Newark, they're concerned about jihadist Islamic terrorism. We watched the Twin Towers from Newark go down. But since 9/11, 85 violent incidents, 73%, were with people that hold bigoted, hateful ideas about minorities. One American killed in Charleston, Virginia, and dozens injured. 9 Americans killed in a church shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, by a white supremacist. An American killed and another wounded in Kansas after a white supremacist targeted them for their ethnicity, saying, "Get out of my country." 6 Americans killed and 4 others wounded in Wisconsin, where white supremacists targeted individuals for their religion.
I know what you're thinking. Does he have a question? No.
In an Oval Office meeting, referring to people from African countries and Haitians with the most vile and vulgar language, that language festers. When ignorance and bigotry is allied with power, it is a dangerous force in our country.
Is there a question coming?
Your silence and your amnesia is complicity. Right now in our nation, we have a problem. I don't know if 73% of your time is spent on white supremacist hate groups.
That's a question.
I don't know if 73% of your time is spent concerned about the people in fear in communities in this country. Sikh Americans, Muslim Americans, Black Americans.
This is he's running for president here.
The fear of the threats in this country.
Come on. Yep.
I hurt. When Dick Durbin called me, I had tears of rage when I heard about his experience in that meeting. And for you not to feel that hurt and that pain and to dismiss some of the questions of my colleagues, saying I've already answered that line of questions, when tens of millions of Americans are hurting right now because of what they're worried about, what happened in the White House, that's unacceptable to me.
Okay, by the way, I want to point something, if you could pause it. Tears of Rage was my Tears for Fears cover band in college.
They were great.
They were great. Amazing. They were terrific. I saw them open at the Palestra.
Yeah.
Booker, there's more grandstanding coming here. There's a lot more grandstanding. But I bring this up to you because you need to know this guy is running for president. He is part of the opposition for 2020 running for president. And you see what he's laying out here as the case. It's fascinating to analyze, which I will do for you after the news. 855-839-1210, #1210 on a sale. And yes, because I am math challenge, it is 99 years ago today that Prohibition happened, 1919, since we are in the year 2018. You're right. I'm always a year ahead of myself. Right, 99 years ago today.
The sentiment was there.
The point remains, however, that it was almost 100 years ago.
Basically true
that it was 100 years ago. My math is 25th Amendment bad. And my math is truly 25th Amendment bad. Straight ahead.
Rich Cioli, 3 to 6. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.